Guys, welcome back to another episode of Did I Stutter? I'm your host. I'm A, or just who cares? It doesn't matter. We have an amazing guest on today, a guy I've known for a long, long time. So funny, he crushes all over Los Angeles and places that he does not live as well. please welcome my friend Amir K. How are you, Amir?
Hi, Drew Lash. How you doing?
Hi,
Drew Lash.
You do that thing so much, and I love it. You're on stage, and is that recent? You start to do this thing where in between your punchlines, or you do like a thing like this, it makes it immediately so silly, and you just get so much of your cadence from... Like, you just get your aura on stage. Is that new?
I think that's in lieu of punchlines. Yeah, like, I find... I really think that it helps. You know, I don't know. I've always, like even in school and stuff, I always had, like, made up my own lingo or something.
Yeah.
And then you know, friends would pick up on it or some words that I would say. So I think it just bled into that now, my performance. But, yeah, it's I've been doing it for a few years, you know?
Yeah, it's so funny. I when there's a comedian who... who immediately gets on stage and is likable. Like you, I noticed you start you close. I mean, you've always closed so many shows, but everybody has you closing shows now because they're just like, man, we're going to end so strong. It's going to be so silly. And I hear people on the way out and people are saying hi to you. Like it's really cool to see. I mean, you've always been so funny, but I mean, it's just lately you're just crushing, man.
Thanks so much, brother. Yeah. I appreciate it coming from you. That's a big compliment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've been doing comedy for how long?
Almost 15 years. So hit 14.
Yeah.
In February. So yeah, almost 15.
Yeah. Years. What was go ahead.
Oh no, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, what was your starting club out here?
I was at the Haha.
Yeah.
You had Flappers. I had the Haha.
That's so funny.
But that's where I remember you from, you know, but
We all got to start somewhere. Good places to start.
And that's where you get on stage, you know? And nothing against both those clubs.
Yeah.
Great clubs. I mean, you know, there's a stage and there's a place to get up.
Yeah.
So I always tell new comics, I go where you can get up, man. Because everyone wants to start at the Improv or the Comedy Store, the Laugh. It's not that easy to.
Yeah. What's your... because you came from... Where are you from here in the States?
I'm from Orange County. I grew up down in OC.
Oh, wow. That's so funny.
City of Orange, yeah.
That's so funny, yeah. Because you're... I don't know. You could be literally from anywhere. You can see some comics who go on stage and they're like, I can immediately tell this dude's from New York. I can tell from this dude's from Chicago or from the South. From you, I never really knew.
I think it comes from just like being an immigrant coming here and then just blending in. You know what I mean? Like coming as a kid. Like I talk a lot in my act about like being just kind of absorbing everybody's culture and their the way they talk, and that's why I do characters and stuff so well. Yeah. I think is because I picked that up early.
Yeah,
I think my ear is good for mimicry.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I was talking with Ian about this not too long ago too, because he grew
Ian
up in
Edwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He came from England, and he just noticed that humor was that thing that he knew he could gravitate towards to try and fit in places. And my wife, she's Bulgarian. Her parents are first generation, so that she also feels so much like humor was a way that she could just really try to make herself seem not so like she's sticking out.
Right.
You know?
I think I did the same thing.
Yeah.
It was just like an easy way to have people like me, I guess.
You always knew you wanted to be a stand-up?
I don't know if I knew what stand-up even was, you know, forever. You know what I mean?
Do you know now?
I do. I don't know if you watch me on stage. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
No, I do. I always knew, I wanted to do some sort of performance of something because I loved doing that. Like, any elective class I had in school, I don't know if you were the same, but it would always be, some sort of performance art.
Yeah.
Like, a theater class or something like that. So I always knew I wanted to entertain or something, but I didn't know that it was going to be stand-up until... I figured, this is the way you could do it, is just by yourself.
I mean, you have an acting background too, with not just what you book around town, but also even in your what you do on stage. It's you can go with an act out for a long time and get people going for a long time.
Yeah, I like telling stories, and I think I just found that I always did that anyway, like at parties and stuff. I like recreate, you know, like if something happened to me and my buddies, I'd like tell the story 1,000 times at a party, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'd go from one group to the next to the next. It's like little sets. It's
changing.
They're little sets, and then you add tags and you go this and you embellish this part, you know what I mean?
That's not the same story.
Yeah.
Tell it that thing where you tell that friend the same story twice. It's like, that's different. Yeah, that didn't even happen to you. Yeah. That happened to Conrad when you first told me.
So yeah, I think I had a natural ability. So when people ask you like, how long have you been doing it? I've been doing it since I was like a kid. You know, I don't know. A lot of comics I feel are that way.
Yeah.
Like you had something in you that just allowed you to get into that, you know, storytelling ability or whatever, which I was always, I think I was pretty decent at.
So good. I mean, you, I remember a few years ago, just post-pandemic, you were talking about your Australian girlfriend or the girl you were with, or you were with a girl who was Australian, and you would do that. You would do her accent for a long time, and it was so funny. When you're making other comics, you know, when you're making other comics just die at just like the idea of a premise, and you're just talking about, you know, you were just talking about like their accent and how it goes on forever and ever for such a long time, and it comes back throughout the set too, not in a way that even has to make sense. That's what I like when I watch you, is it doesn't have to make sense for even that moment. It's just, it's so silly. It's like watching like, it's like when you watch like a cat just being a cat. You're just like, oh, it's just, it's entertaining, even though it's not, it doesn't have to make sense.
That's going in my bio.
Yeah.
That's in my new bio. It's like watching a cat be a cat. It doesn't need to make sense. Just enjoy Amir K coming to your city soon. I like that, dude. Dude just wrote my new bio. All right.
Do you remember your first set?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think, well, my very first set, I was like, I think 17 or not even like, or 18, I don't know. And I did it at some open mic in Newport Beach or Costa Mesa, where I was living at the time. And it was a bar called Chester Drawers. And I wasn't even old enough to be in there, I don't think. So I went in with my brother's ID, and it was like a bar with like five, you know, people in there. And it was just a mic, and I went and did a set, and it was all about like where I was working at the time, which was the Daily Grill. I wrote like this routine, and I practiced it so many times in the mirror, you know. And it was like 5 minutes about just all the people that worked at my restaurant, and you know, all the different characters and whatever that I had there. And it went decent, you know. And I was like, oh shit, I like this. And I remember meeting some of the comics, and it was different because now I realize like what that was. It was an Orange County scene, you know, so it wasn't like, and everyone was like, they're like, I remember one guy was like, I have a set in LA next month, you know?
Yeah.
So he was like getting ready for it then, you know, and now it's like we do so many shows a night, but
you don't even think about something.
Yeah,
like that.
But it was funny because I remember doing it then, because I, when I started doing all those theater classes and stuff like that, and I did like some theater rep course in Orange Coast College. It was like a Saturday Night Live type of thing where you write sketches and then you do it at the end of the semester.
Yeah.
You do like a show for everyone. And I got into that, and some of the guys were like, hey, you should try stand up. And then they told me, so I tried it when I was 18. And then I did it like a few sets, maybe like three sets. And then I didn't do it again for like 10 years.
Really?
Yeah. Until I was 29 started when I was 27. Sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts because I was like, it was weird. It was like a thing where I'm like, I guess I had a fear of failure of it or something, you know, like a lot of guys do, where they're like, well, what if I do it and I'm not good at it?
Yeah.
You know? But then I did it and I was like, oh shit, I could do this. But then that like was a different thing then. I was like, well, okay, I can do this. But let me go do the school thing for my parents and make them proud.
Yeah.
That way. So I'll go to college, and you know, I went to UCLA and I was like, oh, let me do that. And then shortly after that, you know, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I, you only get one life, one chance. Like, why live for anyone else? Like,
your parents, because your parents are from Iran.
They're Iranian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, is to be like, you have to go to school, and you have to, I dated a girl, she was Persian, and her parents were both doctors, right. And she wanted to do acting, and
it's just not a viable option. It's also like we're immigrants, so they're like, hey dude, come here and just fucking stick to the script, man. Do something that makes money, you know, because they don't, it's not that they don't want you to follow your dream, it's like they just know it's so hard.
Yeah.
And it's like they came here, don't, you know, like
you why can, are you fucking around?
Yeah, what are you doing? go do this. Like if you go study law, you can make money. If you go, you know, study medicine, you could make money. Like,
yeah,
it's just a surefire way. I think people get a bad, like Middle Eastern parents get a bad reputation for like, you know, pressuring them, but it's out of love. It's like, hey, dude, we want you to do well. We want you to be financially secure.
Yeah.
So I never, and I don't think my parents were never like, I just thought there was that, in my back of my head, I said, we're immigrants, dude. We came here. They sacrificed everything for us to come here. Mm. Let me at least do the school thing for them, you know? Mm. And then after that, I was like, dude, you don't really, then when I realized what the world was after, a few years of doing real estate and stuff like that, I go, hey man, you can make money doing really anything.
Wow. So you in real estate too?
I did. Yeah. Like after when I graduated college, I graduated in 2004. And the real estate market was crazy. I had friends that were my age that were like, 21, 22 that were like, dude, buying houses, like multiple cars and stuff. Cause the real estate market was crazy. Everyone's doing loans in Orange County. It was like insane. Everybody was a loan officer and did this and that. And I had a friend who his dad owned an appraisal company, like real estate appraisals. Mm. So it was kind of more of a niche thing. Like it wasn't like everybody else. So we were the few guys that did the appraisals, and we did appraisals for every loan company. So just the sheer volume in that business, they were making a killing. I don't know if you watched the movie The Big Short.
Yeah.
It was pretty much that. Like the company they're talking about is the company that we were doing the majority of their appraisals.
Wow.
So there was a lot of money being made at the time. And then, you're young and stupid, and I was buying like nice cars and bought a condo in Huntington Beach. And I was like 23, 24. I didn't even, and my bills then became fucking $15,000 a month for, shit that I, buying for no reason.
Wow.
And mortgage, HOA and all this stuff. And I thought it would never end. You're just doing it and doing it. And then the market tanked.
Yeah.
And then I lost my ass. Like I lost because I started my own company after like a year or two of working with my buddy.
Jeez.
I started like my own appraisal thing and was doing really good. And then I lost like 70% of my business in like a month. Wow. So then, but the bills were still there, So then I was like, fuck, I just let the house go. I had some like tenants renting, but like at some point I stopped paying my rent, the mortgage, and told them, I was like, hey man, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I think they're just going to foreclose on the house. Cause I'm not able to make the money.
Wow. To pay it. So then where do you go? Where did you go from there? Like, what were you like?
So then I had my girlfriend at the time got a job because she moved from Maryland to live with me. Hmm. It was my girlfriend at the time. She came in and she had aspirations to like move to LA and she wanted to work at like, at this PR firm that she like, was really into. I don't know. It was like a company called Harrison and Schriftman. It was like a big PR firm in LA. Mm. And she ended up getting a job there. And then at the same time, my business was going to shit. Mm. And then she's like, let's move to LA. And I was like, oh. And at that time I was like, dude, I should start doing stand up, like now that I don't have anything tying me down, like no business coming in or anything. I'm like, I'm going to start, this will give me a perfect opportunity for me to start stand up. So like in 2008, we moved to LA cause she got that job. And her mom was pretty well off and put us up in the apartment right across from the Laugh Factory. Do you know that? You know the place right there? And it was brand new. We were the first people to live in that place.
It's not brand new anymore.
No, it's not. And it was like so tiny, but it was so expensive. And then her mom was like totally helping us out. So it was like, man, we gotta go up there and lived in this dope place. And the Laugh Factory was right across the street. And I was like, dude, and I would go, I remember jogging and going like seeing the marquee. And thinking like one day I'm gonna go there, but it took me like a year still to get the balls to even go do an open mic,
to audition there.
No, just to go do open mic stand up. Wow. And then that was like the one when you said your first set. Do you remember it? The two sets came to mind. It was that one at that open mic bar in Orange County, and then
drawers or books.
Chester drawers. Yeah, it was called something like that. And then the other one was the Rainbow Bar. Mm-hmm. And that downstairs fucking thing. And I remember Hal Sparks was on the show and I was like, dude, this is insane. Like, he's on E, he's the host of E. What the fuck is he doing here?
Yeah.
And I was waiting to go on and I was so nervous. I took my girlfriend there and it was like one of those sign up things, for open mic. And it was like musicians and whoever wanted to do whatever with a mic and a stage.
Sometimes those can be fun shows actually.
But it was brutal, dude. I was like last, and then I tried my routine from, 10 years ago that I had written, that's the same jokes that I brought. And it was just, I bombed so hard. It was like, and I was so, because I had this thing of like, oh, I could do this, and then I just like kind of used the same material that I had from back in the day when I wrote it. And it just did not go well. It was like fucking, 2 hours into an open mic of no one giving a shit.
And you brought your girlfriend.
Yeah. It's, and it was just kind. Like, oh, and then her family, just didn't, they're like, what are you doing? Like, what? Like, cause her mom had a successful like freighting business. So they're like, why don't you just come work for us? You know, like, what are you doing? Like, this is, you know. Mm.
Do you find that negative reinforcement is a motivator for you, or are you someone who is drawn towards like positive reinforcement?
No, I think it's that negative thing when someone tells you not to do it that you go toward it, you know.
Yeah.
And that definitely happened with that, because mm-hmm. that stand up like definitely ruined our relationship. It was like, because mm-hmm. she'd come home from work at like 5, and then I would leave at like 6
yeah.
to go to like the haha, you know, and be there.
Yeah.
Even, you know, 5:30 or 6, and I'd go do the open mic and then hang out all night and wait till the late show.
There's no way to explain it to somebody. To find that person who can understand it.
Yeah, once okay you know how it is, like once you get it, once you get like, this is what I'm doing, and mm-hmm. you go hardcore, like no one else. And people always ask me, like younger comics or newer comics, like, man, I want to go. I'm like, dude, once no one's going to twist your arm to do this. Mm-hmm. This is a profession that, like, you know, there's no guidebook or anything like that. You got to really want to do it.
Yeah.
And then you find every imaginable way to do it.
Like, yeah.
You just got to get on stage. That's it. And if you work hard enough, good things happen eventually.
What was your first good thing that happened?
I remember one time, you know Ron G?
Yeah, I love Ron G.
I love Ron, dude.
He's a hard dude to follow, bro.
Yeah, yeah, Ron destroys.
When Ron gets going, bro.
Yeah, I've seen him destroy, dude. And at the time, I met him at the Haha, and he was like doing Last Comic Standing, and I'd seen him on TV. Mm. I was like, dude, what the fuck is this guy doing here? You know, and he was like, because he was killing on the show, and I was like, oh, this guy's made it. You know, when you saw somebody on TV, then you're like, this guy's made it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he saw me at the Haha, and he thought I was funny. It was very, very new into comedy. And he's like, dude, I got a gig for you. I was like, what's up? What is it? He's like, it's a military base, and it pays $500. Is that cool? I was like, $500? I said, I made it, motherfucker. I made it. I remember calling my brother. I was like, dude, I'm going to get $500 to do this gig. And he's like, well, at least you're making money now. And then I didn't realize that, like, I wouldn't make money for another, like, 3 years. Yeah, yeah. You know, like, I'd get paid in nachos and chicken fingers for the yeah. next, like, 3 years or some shit. But, yeah.
They're sparse.
That was one that I was like, oh, wow. But that was, like, the first, like, little opportunity that I got. And then just little stuff along the way, you know.
I had Maranzio do a similar thing for me. Maranzio, he vouched for me at a... I did a guest set at Flappers, and he was like, I got a spot over at the Improv at 10. Can you get off work by then? And I was like, I'll ask. I'll see. I'll try to get my thing or whatever. Yeah. So I tried to wrap up my tickets job as quickly as I could, and then I rushed over to the Improv. It was his show. He was just having me do 5. Jesus was hosting, and I went up, and it was a big bomb. It was a big bomb. Big. I mean, so big. And Jesus, I remember.
Were you cold opening the show?
No, it was guests. Oh, there was after. Okay. Yeah, I think it was Jesus, maybe another comic, and then me. And then I think maybe another comic, and then Ronzio. I was sprinkled in. I was in a nice little cushion spot. We're established as a comedy show. Yeah. It takes someone special to fuck that up.
I mean, dude, when you're that new, man, it's not hard to fuck it up. It really isn't, because you don't know. And then when people get thrown into a new room, I've seen like kind of like seasoned guys get thrown off in like rooms they don't play in a lot. You've seen
it. Oh, interesting.
Like if they don't come to the Improv all the time, or they don't play the OR in the store, they get like weird, and then they go up and it's not the set that, you know them. Mm-hmm. And you go, this guy's way better than this. What the fuck's happening?
Yeah.
And I've had that happen to me too.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hard.
So it's like stressful.
How do you feel? How do you feel when you get, when you have like a set that, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, I've seen you so many times and for so long, I can't imagine a set for you that doesn't go well. But at the time where you're young and it wasn't, I mean, how did you mentally sort of cope with something like that?
I think I attacked the audience. I think there was years where I did that. You know what I mean? You go, look at this fucking guy. Yeah. Yeah. Like I did that when I was a kid, you know, I'd attack you before you hurt me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You
know?
I don't want to get hurt. Fuck you. You know? But then I learned, and I think this is good for anybody that's listening, that's a newer comic or something. Yeah. And I tell guys this all the time, even guys that open for me and stuff. I tell them, you can't bomb if you're having a great time. When you're fucking bombing, dude, enjoy this, because if you're laughing and having a good, I'll start laughing, dude. I go and I acknowledge what's happening, mm-hmm. and then that turns it around. And it's like, you really can't bomb if you're like that, you know?
I think that speaks volumes about the way that you perform, you specifically, because it just makes sense. You said the exact thing that I think makes sense for when I'm watching you is like, It's very honest. It's very, what if this is happening right now, then I'm going to address whatever is happening right now.
Right.
And I think that is a great point, because there is this expectation that we're putting on ourselves that could come from all directions, not just our own, but like, maybe there's comics over there. Maybe there's audience coming in, you know? And so when you make it just for you, or when, like, it's that age old advice of like, this has to be fun, or you at least have fun, because you can have a shitty time doing any job, right? We all have heard that. But I just think, like, when especially leaning into like a bomb, especially just
leaning
being
in,
like,
dude, lean in. I love that word. Just to lean into it, because then it can't, then like you said, not that it's, you just, you can learn from it, but then you realize, like, you become bomb proof when it's just fucking, it's a, because once you do so many sets, and I think a lot of people, they make the mistake of attaching this value to these sets that, you know, like, once you get one set at the Laugh Factory or something, you're like, oh my God, I'm doing the Laugh Factory now. So like, and then they, that's where the nerves come. But then once you do so many, it's just like, dude, you know,
you're
I'm going
to
still do
to
this tomorrow. I'm going
to,
exactly. And then you go, and then you, and you can kind of get out of it. You can kind of get out of it by just, like you said, like acknowledging it and then going like, oh, this is, you know, whatever. And then audibly. And I think a lot of people get stuck in, especially when you're newer, you get stuck in that tape. You're like, this is my set and I'm going to do this. And you forget, dude, you can audible anytime.
Yeah.
You can fucking pull out of something. You can do something else. You can be in the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's what, one of the things I like to do, you know, is like be in the fucking room, dude. Like, it's a different night every night, and whatever's happening for this situation is what I'm going to do for this situation.
There's a pedigree of comic that comes from the haha. Like, you're just describing this. Brent does that really well.
Yeah.
He does that really well, where he's just, he's malleable within a moment. I mean, you know, Jason Collings, another dude, so funny, also a haha guy. I mean, I think these guys go from the haha, and then they get, they go over to the store, and then, I mean, the store breeds that right out of you. If you're ever at a place where you're feeling like, oh, this could be, you know, if you had a plan, or if you thought you had some expectation or some tie to, so you had some ties to however you hoped this was going. I mean, those guys are really, really malleable, you know?
I mean, Chris, in his day, he's malleable. 100%. I think those sets at the haha, I liked starting there because it was like, dude, those crowds were so rowdy. There's no security. You know, you got to kind of handle every situation. So I liked starting there because it was like, that was the first place I really felt like, just, you know, I'd go up and do nothing. I could do whatever the hell I wanted to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt so free on that stage. I remember it was just like, I did so many sets there that it was like, that was my, you know, like home court. And I just would like get so loose and experiment and do these things. And I think it's so important for like a young guy finding his voice to have a room like that, you know, where you're not scared about like, oh, dude, what if Rita sees me and I fuck up, then, you know, like all the, whoever the booker is of the room, you're afraid they're going to see you, or, you know, Tommy's going to see me, or Mitzi, or whoever it was at the time. And it just like having that, I think, really helped me get so comfortable that when I went to the other rooms, by the time I got to the Laugh Factory, by the time I got to the Improv, by the time I got to the Comedy Store, that I was, you know, so confident and comfortable that I was like, I could do this. I could do it.
What's your work-play balance life look like
nowadays?
Yeah.
Before, dude, I was so, I did so much eat, breathe, shit, sleep, stand up.
Yeah.
And I was like that for years. I remember, and Rick, you know, Rick Glassman.
Yeah.
Rick and I went and did his podcast. And it was so funny. I was so stuck in that mindset of like, dude, it's only stand up. It's got you only. You have to get up fucking 20 times a night if you're going to be good. And I would just think that. And to a point, I think that's true. Like, you should do that until you're so comfortable. Now it's like, I can't get any more comfortable on stage. Yeah, literally, I cannot.
Yeah, you should stop being so comfortable.
No, but I'm saying, because it's like, dude, you get to that point. All right, now there's like a diminishing return here.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you don't need to do 10,000 sets. It's almost better to take 2 days and figure something else out, or go live your life and come up with some new shit to talk.
Yes.
Because before, I was doing so many sets that I became unrelatable. You know, everything is like, hey, I was at this show and this guy said this at this show, and I was in Montana at this show. It's like, everything's a, you're at a show every day. You don't, I live a lot. I work, I have kids, I do this, I do that. So I forgot that, like, dude, and that's what was so good about me starting at 27 was I had 27 years of shit to talk about and pull from, as opposed to like a kid that was 17, 18 when I started and talking about just, you know, masturbating or all that below the belt shit that you do when you're brand new.
Yeah.
So I think I needed to just, like, the pandemic really helped, honestly, to show me, like, dude, go live your life, man. Go be in the world.
Yeah.
So you can come and talk and tell these, you know, funny stories and whatever about what you did.
Yeah.
And not just talk about, oh, I was hanging out at the Comedy Store and this happens. Like, nobody's hanging out at the Comedy Store. That's a regular person.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite jokes that you have is about jury duty. And it's so.
Oh, yeah. The traffic court.
Yeah. Yeah. The traffic court thing. It's just like, you know, it's just so. It's in that nice medium of like, this applies to us. And mentally, I can see myself in this place because of the picture this guy's painting. What are some of the things that you find yourself doing for like a play, like or a hobby type thing?
You know, the hobbies I picked up during the pandemic was like I really got into boxing and I got into fishing, like crazy into fishing.
Yeah, you got a fish right now.
Like
I saw that.
I fish like all the time. I got a little boat, dude, and I just went crazy fishing.
Doesn't Brian Simpson have like a fishing show?
I don't know. Does he?
I think he does, or no someone. Way. No, no, no. It's not Brian Simpson. It's
you are racist,
David
sir.
Lucas. Yeah, you are racist. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I guess it's David. I think he may have done his show.
Yeah, probably. That's it. Maybe that's it. Yeah, yeah.
But David Lucas and I have talked about it. Yeah, he likes to do like that bass fishing out in Austin and stuff, and that's really cool. So I've started to do that too. Like when I was in Florida, did some fishing. I went to Colorado, did some fly fishing. You know,
it's got to be so peaceful,
dude. It's like such, you know, because we're on all these flights and you're in this little rat race thing when you're in LA. That when I get out there on the boat, dude, and I'm by myself, there's nothing like it. And I really needed it for my mental. I know we've talked about this at the comedy clubs where. Sometimes you're, you know, you'd be like stuck and you're like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm supposed to be this. We're like these sad clowns, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm supposed to be, and everyone sees you and they're like, oh my God, you're here. They're so happy to see you, but they don't know. Sometimes you go back to your place and you might just kind of be down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was getting like that because I was like, you get stuck in that rhythm of just like the same thing every day. And you're like, this is it. Like, what, you know, and you see guys that make a ton of money and they're not happy.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of money and they're not happy. And you go, oh, okay, so that's not it.
Yeah.
So that's not it. Like, so go do stuff. Go do stuff you enjoy.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, obviously, there's no place I'd rather be than on stage, as corny as that sounds.
Sure, sure.
I can't do that every hour of the day.
Yeah. And you can, and too much of anything is like, it's just, I think you said it well. It's like, you know, the year that I did 500 sets before I got on TV, like, in a year, I was like 500 sets. So many things suffered. My relationship suffered, you know, physically. Everything was just suffering. But I learned so much because someone gave me the advice that you need to get up every night, multiple times a night. It's a huge deal.
But it showed, dude. Like, your level of growth from when I saw you in the beginning to, like, yeah, just a couple years in, I was like, damn, this kid got funny.
Thank you.
You know? Because, like, dude, it was easy to write guys off from the flapper stuff. Like, oh, you'll never see this guy. You'll never see this guy. And then all of a sudden, you're like, you popped up. I was like, damn, Drew got hilarious.
Thank you, buddy. But I just think it's like, it's exactly what you're saying, where you get so comfortable in every environment that any new one that you come into, it's nothing that you haven't dealt with in some way or another. So these milestones feel not they're not less significant, but they're just softer in your mind as far as expectation goes. And so when you, the pandemic did the same thing for me. Like I was in 2019, I did so many shows, my arms hurt, like from being on my phone and working, and my head hurt, everything. I was just miserable. And I was going into the 2020 year saying yes to just as many things, saying yes to every show. I mean, it was just, by some divine act of stoppage, I had to be able to say no to things. And so the pandemic really kind of like brought up, you know, like yoga and hiking. And my wife and I, we were in Vermont for a while. And I do think that you said it best, where the hustle and bustle of what we do, stand up when you get to the place that we are, I think people don't realize that so much of like the travel, like all of that stuff, that's like the grind. Like when you're traveling,
that's
and you're,
the work part.
That's the work the part. Part.
That's the hard, really, that is. Because like the only thing I ever find myself complaining about is like, oh, an early flight this or early. Getting on stage is the easy part, dude. That's like that's the fun. That's the, that's not work to me at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's like just getting there and all that stuff. Like you said, and that's hell on your body, dude. Doing all these flights and the sleep schedule getting fucked up because you went, you know, to a different time zone and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think like what you did though is very important. Like, you know, not to just, you know, deter any of the young comics from doing a lot of sets, because that, you know, you don't get to our level without doing. I remember writing in my, like 560 sets this year. That was important because you can only get to the level of comfort that we have on stage from doing those shows.
Yeah. You know? What's your what's your process for when you come up with something new? And do you find yourself at a more peaceful place when you come up with that thing because of this more leisurely approach that you have now?
If I can be completely honest, sometimes I feel like not creative at all. Hmm. And I've been in a rut like that for a couple weeks recently. Hmm. And it's so weird. I'll be on stage and when you're like, I'm like, dude, am I wasting this time right here? Because I have nothing that is coming to me that, because I like to write on stage. I like to get an idea or like a story and then talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because it's like the first time I tell it is like the funniest I tell it. Sometimes, I don't know if you've ever played with a story and you go, dude, that's it.
Yeah.
And then you try it the next night and it just eats. And I go, oh, you know, that's the mistake of trying to recreate the moments and stuff. But then I find in that way, like it's like, you know, that block of stone or whatever that you're honing, like that corny little saying goes, that we're honing this thing, and you just chip away at that thing. And I do that by going on stage every night and trying different things. And
so you write an idea.
I write an idea or like a story. I go, well, I got a massage. I want to talk about this thing, how weird this was. And then I'll start, you know, with that.
Yeah.
And there's funny little premise, you know, like little, I know that there's little punches here and there.
Yeah.
And then I might even write around the punchline, you know, I go, this was super funny. So how did I get there?
Well, here's the thing. The story we were talking about, the girl that you dated who was Australian,
right?
You hurt your head or she hurt her
head? Oh my God, that was a story that I was telling it for like 2 months. And it was one of those stories where it's so long and it was so like involved that you had to be in it. And I find that like even with, you know, doing something on tape or putting a special out, you know, when it's overcooked and you've told it too much or you're not excited about telling it, there's something that, you know, the audience can tell.
Yeah.
You never want to be in a bit that you don't want to be telling.
Yeah.
And once that happens to me, I'm like, fuck, this is over. So it happened with that bit because it's so long and so involved. But at the time it was so fresh and I wanted to tell it. And I told it for like a good 2-3 months.
Well, when I saw it, it was early.
Yeah.
When I saw it, you were early in it.
Yeah.
And I could tell you, I think when you have that first telling of a joke, sometimes you just have the excitement and they can feel that.
Right.
And sometimes that's what carries you through this first time. Like, wow, I think I'm really getting the sense he's telling this for the first time. And because it is.
And then you could fake that for so many times. You know what I mean?
More
especially
times.
A long story. You could fake that for, and you know who's really good? Bill Burr. Like I remember watching him and I learned from him that like, dude, because I saw his set, you know, the joke that he was doing, and then I saw him at 10 different rooms and then telling it like it was the first time he was telling.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that's how you do it. Like, you know, all these people that are like, oh, I got to, you know, I'm doing a new show. I got to do a new 5 minutes. No, you don't. You got to get really good at making it sound like you're just saying that shit for the first. That's the magic of what we do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like when someone could come see you 30 times, and I do little different things every, you know, whatever. I'm very loose with the set, but you know, the real, like Sebastian Maniscalco, dude, the great guys that, that do it. That, like, I remember working with him one time and like he did, you know, we did 6 shows or 5 shows and every show was different. I watched all of them, dude. I was like, oh shit, this guy.
Yeah.
And it all sounded fresh. It all sounded fresh. So I was like, okay, that's a skill.
It is. It is. And I think with LA, it's almost like if it's even kind of polished and they pick up on it, they pull back.
Absolutely. And I think that's what, when you see actors start doing stand-up and stuff, I think the audience could tell.
Yeah.
Just like you know, a casting director could tell when a comic goes to act and they don't do this for, you know, like all the time. You know? Like, an actor's good. You can't just, I have a buddy, Andy Kozel. I don't know if you know Andy.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, comic. He would always say, oh, you're doing your tape. You look like you're, it looks like an audition. It looks like a, what do you call it? Like a script. You're reading a fucking script and you're not even in the room. Like you could, you know, you could be by yourself with no audience and you sound the exact same. And I think that's what, like, that's what, as soon as the audience could tell you're in a bit, it's over.
Yeah.
You know,
that's wild.
Especially sorry to cut you off.
No.
Like on like a Comedy Store show of like, you know, the potluck where we used to do early on where it was like, you know, 40 comics go up and do like 3 to 5 minutes or something, you know? And after the fucking 30th comic, dude, if you start a bit and they even smell this is a joke that you wrote, it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's crazy. I can't imagine it any, I couldn't imagine, I don't know that I've ever seen a set from you, ever. And I've seen you for a long time. I don't know that I've ever seen one where I was like, because I've heard your jokes so many times, but you convinced me. I was like, have I heard this one? Literally, you convinced me.
That's cool. Thank you. That's a compliment.
That's crazy. Thank you. But I think you're even talking about how you have these little, there are little subtle things too, like that you're just mentioning, mm-hmm. that you do that are just a little bit different.
Right. And you know? It might be just for that night. And honestly, I don't know if you feel the same way, but there's some tags that just work for that night. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And you can try it again later. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just like the rhythm of the show and the laughs and the,
yeah.
you know how that shit's coming, the wall of laughs, and then you're boom, you're in it. You're just riding that wave and it's just, you're in the rhythm. And then that tag just hits perfect. But then it won't work again if this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you start 100%. Getting in tune with what's coming in
mm-hmm.
and how you're going to do it or if I'm going to be able to do this. And then there are some tags that just work 1 out of 10 times that I can't let go, you know,
yeah. Sometimes you can get a great tape from a tag that worked that one time and it never works again. And you're like, I just don't understand. It would fit so well, but it just doesn't for some reason.
This is the clip that's going up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I got it once.
Yeah, 100%. When you say that you have been felt creatively in a rut recently, what is it that you usually do to get yourself out of it? Because I was talking to this comic, and before you answer, the reason I want to say this is to give you some context to how I mean it. There was this comic who asked me, and she was like, she's new, she was like a year in, and she goes, what is it that I can like do to really, should I just like, how do I write? Is it just that I write to be funny? And I was like, I think some of the best, like Sebastian, even going back as early as like Jerry, Bill, they're all so good at just complaining. They come from a place of complaining.
Right.
They ask questions within why things have to be that way. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's like, if it's funny to them, that almost comes secondary. But my overall resolve for when someone becomes creatively stuck, at least for me, is I don't even try to be funny. I just try to be silly. And when I get silly, it's like funny almost becomes a byproduct. It's like it's in the periphery.
I've seen you get like that on stage. I like it, mm-hmm. you know, because it's easy to get like backed in the corner and go, fuck this audience, and then like not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. easy to do that, but yeah. to go with that and get silly and discover something new.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So my question is, what is it that for you, usually you're like, this is how I can get myself out of this, you know, creative rut?
You know, I think it's when I'm having fun in life, like mm-hmm. when I'm having fun in my offstage life, you
yeah.
know, is when I come up with stuff that, okay, I want to talk about this. Or if I yeah. did some experience, then I get like a stroke of inspiration from that, whatever it was I did. I went on a fishing trip, or I went on a hiking trip that went weird, or mm-hmm. I was hanging out with my buddies and this happened, or we were at a restaurant and this happened. And I think it's when I'm in a good place, like mentally, yeah. and I'm having fun, and like, you know, I'm loose, and I'm, you know, in just in my head, and
yeah.
I'm not like having anxiety, and I'm not like sitting in bed because I don't want to get up and do anything. And
yeah,
you know, I think it's just, for me, it's like I don't know, man. It's just like when I'm in a good place in my life off stage is when I get the most inspiration. So I find, how do I get myself there? Like go exercise, go out,
yeah.
go fish, go do all this stuff, go box, go do yeah. the stuff that I like. And then I start to get in a good place.
Yeah. It's like you can see a full human on stage right. because they're that way off stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no transition into a deceiving place if that's the way you are off stage to on.
Exactly.
I saw an interview recently where it was Jokic. I don't watch basketball, but Jokic, the Denver Nuggets guy. He's Eastern European, and he won MVP this past season. And he was doing an interview afterwards, and it's just it became clear in that interview that basketball was so secondary to the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, okay, the job is done. Now I go back to my family. I see them. I'm very excited for this. I love my home.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I see. I know what you're saying.
It was on TikTok.
They ask him like, what now? And he goes, oh, I go home. And he's like, yeah. He's like, dude, this is just the,
yeah.
I do this for money.
Yeah. This is the job. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's inverted because mm-hmm. every other basketball player is like, it's like how we are with comedy, where it's like mm-hmm. comedy is the everything, you know? But I see some comics where, you know, like Beth Stelling is in field hockey and stuff like that. And
oh,
you're
yeah,
just Beth like, you know, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think it's so important for somebody to have that and have that like that real like passion for something else.
Yeah.
Because you get so one dimensional when you're just comedy, comedy, comedy guy, you know?
Yeah.
And that could breed bitterness too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gotten to that place where you were like, I feel myself getting bitter?
You tend to, when social media first came out, 100%, mm-hmm. you know, cause you're like, now you're looking at everybody and you're going, I'm funnier than this. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just as funny as this guy. Why is this guy? You know, it's so easy to fall into that.
Yeah.
And then you just, and you could tell yourself a billion times, dude, everyone's running their own race and this, that, and the other. But it's just so hard to get to not feel it at some mm-hmm. point. And if you're, if you say you don't ever feel it or you never felt it, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
Because it's in your face every day.
Yeah.
You know what we do, we have to, like, and I resisted social media for so long. I thought I was like, I'm going to do it the old school way. And mm-hmm. you know, and the truth of the matter is the shit changed. And if you don't adapt, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah.
You know? So, I resisted it for so long. I was like, no, man, I'm funny. They're just fine. No one's going to find you. If you don't exist online, you don't exist.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you'll see guys that have been doing it for 3-4 years, sell way more tickets than you. And it just was a cold, hard fact that I had to come to terms with. And I was like,
yeah.
And I had managers telling me for years to do it. And I just, finally, I was like, all right, fuck it. Let me just put shit out. And I don't even care anymore. I just put it out. You know, they're little snippets. They're little ads for what I do.
Yeah.
You know, so I found that. And then the social media grew like so crazy, like real quick and in a certain amount of time to where I was like, dude, I'm such an idiot.
You know? Well, I mean, that was my next question is, do you feel like there are people who they get almost better at social media than they do at comedy? Or
I think so. I think yeah. a lot of people will put the, you know, cart before the horse,
sure,
in that sense. And I think that's just the nature of what's happening now.
And
just
finding the balance of between the two.
Right. And you could see it not translate to some guys, you know, but the beauty of like where I'm at and the silver lining I found with where I'm at and with, you know, guys like us are at, and then the social media is just another tool to get, you know, mm-hmm. more eyes on you, I mm-hmm. guess. But like for guys that are new, it could really hinder their process because you get a huge following doing these little, you know, 30-second clips mm-hmm. and then they require you to, you know, do an hour or 45 mm-hmm. minutes to headline. And then the people come see you, you know, they're going to give you that one chance or whatever because mm-hmm. they saw you online. But if you don't deliver the hour of, you know, or mm-hmm. the headlining set that they want to come back and see, then, you know, you're kind of screwing yourself.
My relationship with social media for a long time was one of like just bitter disdain. Like not like I'm not a bitter person, but I just my relationship towards and with my phone was not healthy.
Right.
And but not
you're
in
so
that,
good at it, but was it because you were so like it required so much time to do?
Yeah. I mean, I think once you recognize that it is a tool and that you're fully in control of it, and you know, yes, there's pros and cons to the gatekeepers no longer being around with, you know, people dictating entirely what your opportunities or what your career could be. So I think for me, I just, you know, yeah, I saw it. I worked hard to do it, but there has to be, you know, it's like they say, comparison is the thief of joy. And with social media, it's that over and over and over.
Over and over. And it's like, this guy's doing this better. You know, everyone's mm-hmm. on vacation, but it's your highlight reel, you know? So it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, this has been said a billion times, but I think this is what's leading to depression for these kids. It's like, dude, they're looking at their friends and they're like, I don't have enough followers. And this guy's mm-hmm. on vacation and he's doing this and he's posting. And it's all bullshit. You yeah. see it. It's like, I think it's really fucked mm-hmm. the minds of these kids up.
Mm-hmm. What was your relationship that you, because you being resistant initially to social media, mm-hmm. what was the thing that you flipped in order to have somewhat of a, not healthy relationship with it, but a way that you could make it work for you?
I basically hiring a guy because I would, you know, it would take me like so, and I'm so attached to my stuff and I'm just so in my head and OCD about like what, like, dude, I would do a set and it could be a killer set that joke. And I'd be like, I could do it better because I need to get this tag in that one. Mm-hmm. I need to get this tag in there. I was such a perfectionist with my stuff and so precious with it. Mm-hmm. And then time goes by and you get tired, like I said, of telling that joke. Mm-hmm. So now that time to put that in a thing or a special or something is kind of like, it's gone. So then I was realizing I had all this material that I didn't want to do anymore, but it didn't live anywhere.
Yeah.
And then I was like, dude, shit that's been going viral for me. It's like, dude, I put a set from 2014. It's got 14 million views or like the dog joke that my doogie mm-hmm. joke that I love. That was one of my first jokes I ever wrote that. And then that had evolved into the doing the voice for it and doing whatever. Cause it was something different in the beginning.
Wow.
And then that's those things when you have the skill set to do it and, you know, hone it and make it better. But to get back to your original question of what was the flip was I just saw so many guys that I was like, dude, if they're garnering this huge following just by putting out some clips, I have 10,000 hours of material.
Yeah.
On tape.
Yeah.
That for whatever reason, I would tape my sets and whatever all over town. And halftime, I wouldn't watch them. And I was like, but they were always like, oh, okay, I'm going to do something, or I'm going to watch this and do something with it. So now I have all this catalog of shit that I'm like, dude, you got it. Put it all out.
Yeah.
So I hired a guy, and that was the change. And then when I saw what could happen, like getting like 120,000 followers in a month.
Yeah.
You know, and then the algorithm does whatever it does. But, dude, I was like, what the fuck? I've been like, and then my ticket sales went crazy, and then this and that. And so I'm like, oh, okay. So
yeah,
that's the part of the job that, you know, it's like, I don't know what a good analogy would be, but like, you know, I'm just like a old school frame of thought, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go city to city and do it like the greats did, you know, and they're going to find me. And no, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah.
If they don't, like, literally, like you saw the Matt Rife thing. It's like, I love Matt and he's hilarious. And I'm so proud of him because I've seen the work that he put in. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks, oh, it's this kid, this good looking kid that came out of nowhere. No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That guy put it in, bro. Put it in. And so, for guys like that, that you see, you know, they're giving their, now they're getting their shine. It's like, dude, okay. So if you want to, the people will tell you if you're good or not.
Yeah.
Put your shit out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think for a long time I was afraid of that too. I was like, oh, what if I put this and, you know, it's not good or something.
How did you end up getting working with Maz?
Maz. Oh yeah. So Maz, dude, for Iranians, you know, that was like, he was the guy. He just, he still is the guy.
Yeah.
And I love Maz. He's like a big bro. We actually just, he called me the other day to do some shows with him in DC, some big shows. And I was like, yeah, why not? You know?
Yeah.
And, he's a great dude, man. Great mentor. He taught me a lot about how to, you know, be. I just watched how he is. Not one person has anything bad to say about Maz, you know?
Yeah.
And that there's something to be said.
Yeah.
In the comedy world. And he, you know, Ahmed introduced me actually to Maz. Mm. And he had heard about me a lot, you know, when I was coming up. He'd be like, hey, there's this new Iranian, you know, when you're only like fucking four Iranian comics, you're going to hear about the new guy that's coming. So he had been hearing about me. And Ahmed took me to like the Punchline in Sacramento one time, and we had a great time. And Ahmed vouched for me, to his credit. He was like, dude, you got Maz, you got to see this kid. And I used to have a show that I took from the Haha that, you know, I had a falling out with Jack at the Haha, but it was my So Funny Sundays with Amir K or whatever. I took that to the store and I would have it at the store, and everyone did it, you know, like all these guys, Bobby Lee, you know, Bill Burr, Steve Byrne, Ahmed, all the guys, D'Elia, everybody did it. And then I would always ask Maz, because I was like, I got to get Maz. You know, I got to get Maz on the show. And he'd always be busy. Like, he was either took Sundays off, which I understand now because I take Sundays off. And when you're home, you want to be with he's got a family.
Too. Yeah.
So I'd ask him over and over and over. And he'd always say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy, but the next one. And then finally he was like, hey, man, I got some dates. And I think it may have been a Punchline or some shit. And so we went one time together, we hit it off, and it was just like, you know, then I toured with him for like 4 years or something.
It's great. And Maz is such a good actor too. You guys are both such good like comics and actors. Yeah. I think there's a difference when you see it on stage. I think you can watch someone on stage. Sometimes you watch someone on stage and you're like, I think they're a good actor, but sometimes you watch someone and you're like, no, this person I know is a good actor. And I mean, when you talked about how you wanted, or you were initially taking like classes or something for SNL or like that SNL type stuff, like, is that ever something that you see yourself getting to or wanting to do?
Once I found, like, you know, I did Mad TV for that one season when they brought it back, and once I saw the schedule, and I, nothing against it, I really enjoy it and I love it, and character work is so fun.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about all those sketch players and, you know, those improvisers that are so good at what they do. And I think they all help each other.
Yeah.
But for me, and it, I don't know if it's like that solo aspect that I just love, dude. It's like just you.
Yeah.
You don't, there's nobody to help you. There, you know, it's, I wrestled in high school too. I don't know if there's a real big correlation between comics. A lot of comics I talk to, they're like, oh yeah, I wrestled in high school too. I don't know if it's because we have that thing of like, it's just me, there's nobody else, one-on-one type of thing.
Yeah.
And I just love that, you know, it's like you without a net, and I don't know. I think stand up was where, especially after doing Mad TV, I found, I go, because there's so many other factors.
You
know? You got other actors to worry about. You got other writers, the production, this, that, and the other. And so I really felt like, yeah, stand up was it for me. And I think you can get as big as you want doing that.
That's where you feel you're in your biggest element. Totally. Is like,
and I could paint a picture just like any sketch that you put me in a costume or whatever. I could fucking, without the costume, do that on stage, and you know, you could see what I'm talking about.
I always ask this of everybody I have on the show, but do you remember a time where you doubled down on yourself and it backfired, or it paid off in a huge way?
Double down. I got to think about this. Like, what do you mean? Like a
so where like it was like this is very clear. Yeah, this is very clearly a risk. Obviously, everything that we do and almost pretty much every night is mm-hmm. is us betting on ourselves. But I just mean where maybe career met the I can say yes to this and this can lead to this, or I can say yes to and it led to this, or if there was something where there was a pivotal moment for you and you were like, wow, that really sucked and that was a huge learning mm-hmm. point.
I know one.
Yeah,
I think saying yes to when I was really new, like a year in, I got all these showcases, like big showcases.
When you were really young or when you were 27?
No, when I was brand new in comedy. Like my first year of comedy. Because I came in and I was, I had some sort of stage presence, because mm-hmm. I was very comfortable. I had done some improv stuff in college mm-hmm. too, so I was pretty comfortable on stage. So right away, I think I was like, I kind of hit the ground running with stand-up. Mm. But I got a lot of opportunities early on. And this is a good little warning for guys that are starting and they start to get opportunities. And I didn't understand what it was at the time, because when you're new, you think, oh dude, I'm and you're doing all right, you're doing mm-hmm. good. You're like, dude, I'm killing. I'm so good right mm-hmm. now. You might get big headed a little bit, which I did, because I was like, oh man, I'm killing at the haha. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And you don't realize how much better you're gonna get. Mm-hmm. If I looked at a tape from that first year, mm-hmm. 2 years in, I go, what the What yeah. was I doing?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's how I sounded.
Yeah.
And then you look 3 years, then you look back, what the hell? So I got all these opportunities my first year, like diversity showcase, ABC, NBC, CBS, and I got them all in the same year.
Wow.
And then
that's like unheard of.
Well, yeah, no, CBS and NBC, yeah, the same year. And then I was like, NBC was stand up and CBS was a sketch one. Mm. And this was like, these are a big showcase. This is when all the industry is going to see you. And, mm-hmm. and they did a lot for people's careers. Hassan, Tiffany Haddish, fuck, all these people had done these things.
Yeah.
And I got them and I said yes to them. You know what I mean? I could have, mm-hmm. and I was so, dude, the year I did the NBC showcase, and I remember being just like gutted, dude, because I went up and I wasn't seasoned enough to be able to handle that pressure of a big showcase with a bunch of industry. Mm. I've been doing it like 9 months, dude.
Wow.
And I'm like, and I go out and Russell Peters is hosting.
So funny.
And I do something. I didn't have the greatest set, dude. It was just not, And then the guys that were on the lineup were like 13, 15 years, And then Shang Wang won it that year, but he had already been doing it like 10 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. Like, this is what they mean by, it's never, what is it? Like, you never get two chances to make a first impression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of those people saw me at that time, and who knows, how that affected my career. I don't know, because they don't tell you.
Yeah.
But I remember I was like, oh shit, this may have fucked me up, And that was one that I was like, oh, I learned a big lesson there. And
then
saying yes too early and just being like, oh, cause the opportunity's there, take it right away. You don't have to every time, there's situations where it helps and situations where it could hurt you.
Yeah.
Because as we know, the industry, sometimes they don't come to shows. They don't care.
Yeah.
They're not coming every month to see your growth. Mm-hmm. They saw you and they go, oh, I saw Amir Kade. So the memory they have of me is that fucking set. And it was like 9 months in and I'm just doing whatever I was doing and not able to handle the pressure of all these killers going before me. And I was like kind of later in the lineup.
Yeah.
So your inexperience really shows,
Yeah.
So, and they're all casting directors and shit. So as soon as you step out there, they can smell that mm-hmm. fake confidence or whatever the fuck I was projecting at the time.
That's so interesting, because if there were to be a comic who in a year in, they accept a showcase and you're on it or you're hosting.
Right.
They would be like, there's this guy who's like, they're talking about those guys the same way you're talking about them right now.
Dude, I felt the same way. I was like, I was up there and I go, these guys are killers. Because I was at the haha, I was like, I didn't even know. I was at the Comedy Store. It was in the main room. I go, who the fuck are these guys? Ron Funches was on it. And he was destroying. And like Tony Baker. I mean, it was crazy. Because I remember I was like, dude, these guys are like vets.
Yeah.
And it just, it was such a sobering experience that I went, I was like, I was really fucked up about it. Mm. And I went to the hallway and Moz was there. And Maz and I had already got to know each other a little bit. And I was like, Maz, I just ate it so hard, dude. I told him, I was like, bro, I ate it big time. He's like, Amir. And he talked me off the ledge. He was like, dude, this, what is it? He goes, what is this thing? I go, it's the NBC showcase. And he's like, dude, he's like, you're going to do 1,000 of these. This is what kind of got me through. You know, he's like, dude, you're going to do so many of these coming up, you know, and they're going to come, they'll see you again and this, that, and the other. That made it okay for me. But
yeah,
just now knowing what the industry's like and how everything is, and it was probably been smart for me to just kind of hold off on that for a little bit.
Did you ever meet a comic who you were a little nervous to be on the same show at? Like, you distinctly remember, I'm on a show with somebody who I don't even want them to see me.
I remember I'd get excited when somebody was on the show, and I don't think I was ever, because I was always, when I was starting to, I was always so not cocky, but confident about, yeah, I guess maybe cocky too, yeah. You know, but I was like, and you learn quickly, like, what the protocol is of how to act and shit. And, you know, even at the HaHa, you learn that, like, with the guys that are vets and stuff, you don't fucking come around. Eric Griffin always humbled me, you know, he'd come in and be, man, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, like, hey, shut up, you know, like, so you learn to shut the fuck up when these vets are talking.
Yeah.
And so I remember just being like, okay, cool. This is my opportunity to show them how I do, you know? And so I would always feel like that. But then there was sometimes, like, you'd be at the store and then you'd be like, oh fuck. Like, Chappelle's in the back, or, you know, somebody, you know, just popped in and you don't know if they're watching you or not. Or, like, I remember Chris Rock was there one time and he was standing in the back and then I was next. And then you're like, look, and you go, oh, fuck. And then you're like, your head starts going crazy. What bit should I do? What bit should I do? You know, and then you go up there and whatever. But, you know, then you realize as you get older that he might have walked out 2 seconds later, dude.
Like, yeah.
No one's like going like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
but I do like to give props to the guys that when I watch them and it's like a young guy I've seen around a lot, because you know how it is, so many young comics in the game that you like don't even know a lot of their names and stuff that you might go to see at the clubs now. But like if I've seen a guy come around a lot and then I see him go up, I go, damn, okay. And I love giving him the compliment and going, dude, you've grown a lot, or like, this is awesome, like, you're doing great.
Yeah,
you know, because I know it means something to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes sometimes you can see somebody and in the matter of just months it can click. Mm-hmm. It's really actually kind of cool to watch.
Right.
Especially, I never wanted to do stand up. I always just admired it, and seeing somebody who you're just like, man, they don't have it right now, or they have it but it's just not figured out. And then when you see it just in a short window, because you can get that much growth when you're just going up every single night and you're just grinding to get as good as you can. Some of these guys, that part of it, when you really remove yourself from it and just looking at the beauty of, like, this is someone who's very clearly putting in the work and is now different. Or I'm starting to see, I, if I was ever in casting or if I was ever as a manager, I would be so fucking good at it. I genuinely would. I'd be like, this is it.
You
can
tell. I think once you do it for so long, you kind of tell who's got it and who's going to be good. And just by their presence and how they're doing the thing. And then there's some guys, dude, that you would know.
Yeah.
You know, that you're like, holy shit. And then one thing, like you said, clicks and they're like, damn, this guy's a totally different dude.
Yeah.
But I think that's the problem though with how archaic the industry is now. It's like they just like maybe look at tapes and shit. They don't come and see the talent. That's why I respect the agents and managers that are at the club a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, you're really doing the, you know,
it's a big deal.
You give a shit and you're actually watching your talent and you're seeing what tools they can offer and you can sell them right.
Yeah.
Then there's other guys that you never even seen them once at the club, dude. And they're, you know, how the hell are you pitching me if you don't know what I do? You know, so.
Well, before we go, I guess we've kind of talked just only comedy, but I mean, and I love it. I mean, I know.
I could talk it all day. Yeah. It's just like sometimes when I go on podcasts, I, you know, because you might tell the same story or something, but I love talking shop with a comic, dude. That's, you know, I could do it for hours.
I never want it to feel like anybody has to come on here and do bits or be so. I mean, you've seen me at the clubs. This is pretty much me. I'm like, I'm rigid and boring. But the point is that I like having people on where I get to know them a little bit better, where you're on the scene, you know, we see each other and it's brief, you know? But if there were to be some advice that you could give to someone who's listening to our podcast and there may be a younger comic, what is it that that would be?
I think, honestly, it's keep getting up. Like I said, hard work, stage time, just devoting yourself to your craft. Like that, all the guys that you see that you look up to, I guarantee you they've done it. Work ethic and just like the hard work, man, it'll pay off. In the end, it will. I know it's hard and you think like, why am I not getting any breaks? But just stick to it. And good things happen when you put that time and effort in.
Yeah.
And if you have a little bit of natural ability, that'll carry you a long way. But just be cool. Keep doing it. Yeah, don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
And good things will happen, I guarantee you. Yeah. And stage time. That's it. That's the only way things happen. And be around, man. Be around and be cool. That's it.
Well, I love it, buddy. You know I'm a huge fan of you and your stand-up, so thanks so much for coming on the show. I'm your K, everybody.
Thanks for having me, Drew. That was a lot of fun, brother. Yeah. Have you ever had a dream that you had to do so much you could do anything?